welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello, welcome to episode 217 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford, and a crowd of people in our office here. How are you doing?
We've got an audience.
We should have a couple of round of applause. There you go. Sort of special occasion today. We're doing it in my office, or our office in Birkenhead. Thanks for coming down, Sean.
It's very good.
How are you doing?
I'm very good. I like the dogs barking next door.
We've got a dog in the office next door. We've turned the fan off, so it's not quite over. Too much of a buzz.
Have to take my clothes off now.
It is, well, that's the next step. Yeah, we'll live stream the next one. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about this difficult conversation we've got to have with the guys in this office.
Yeah.
Because someone's put the wallpaper on upside down.
Yes, that's a good example.
It's the loudest wallpaper I've ever heard of. Yeah.
We're talking about difficult conversations, and we had to have one with the decorator recently because he put the wallpaper on upside down. It's not that obvious to be honest.
He didn't know the flowers grow up.
But we're designers and we're like, we're that pedantic about these things. Mike's colourblind, so it's got to be right. We'll come on to that shortly, but liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for all the show notes and links. Stick your email address in one of the boxes and we'll send you some free meditation files, and you'll get a discount code for our book, which is back in stock, isn't it, Sean?
It is, and I'm getting lots of comments about the cover.
Good ones or bad ones?
Both. Some people say to me, what on earth have you done to the book?
Red and blue, well.
Yeah, but others are saying, oh, I like that, it's good.
Design is progressive, yeah, just a little step change here and there. How you been?
I'm good.
You're not abroad, obviously?
But when I come back, it takes me a while to get back, and then I'm winding up to go again, so it's a bit of an odd...
You're in next week?
I've got another week and then I'm back again.
How long's the flight to Qatar again?
7:20 each way, really.
So that's like four movies?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, at least, yeah. No, I enjoy it. That's a good bit. But they've got this crazy thing going because I keep coming and going. They now want me to apply for a residence permit.
Oh, really?
So I can't have a new visa each month. I can just go in and out of the country. So, which is kind of good in a way, but the amount of form you've got to fill out,
they going to look into your backstory? Are they going to look into your...
Yeah, and I'm clean.
Not much, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've had home office clearance, you see.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Working in the prisons and stuff.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to the Clubhouse in Liverpool. It's a bar restaurant in Liverpool. I had a fantastic little afternoon out there on Saturday for my brother's stag do, actually, so it was a little bit, well, got a little bit rowdy towards the end.
So did you dress him up?
We didn't actually, no. No, because he let me off really lightly on mine many moons ago. So I did likewise. Yeah.
You're a nice guy.
I'm a nice guy, and I couldn't be bothered with all that stuff, to be honest.
You're a lazy guy.
Yeah, I'm a lazy, nice guy. Yes. But yeah, they do at the Clubhouse. It's a beautiful setting to start with, but they do masterclass tasting sessions. So we did like Ales of Europe.
Yeah,
it's a masterclass, so this guy came and discussed the things and passed around like little cups of barley to smell and taste and all that, and then obviously was like 9 or 10 bottles of different ales to try, one of which was 14% strength.
Yeah. Ooh,
it tasted like licorice, man, it's crackers.
Yeah.
Good. Some people like that stuff.
Yeah, no, I went with Robert to the brewery in Chester.
Oh yeah,
and
okay.
We did a day there, but I have a 5-litre keg of beer in the fridge.
I saw that. Have you got to drink
it
quickly?
It needs to be drunk. Once you open it, you have to drink it within 48 hours. So.
Well, you're coming to us for dinner on Friday, aren't you?
She'll like me to bring it.
Yeah, you'll have to get a taxi back, though. All right, should we dive into this week's show?
Yeah.
You sent me a link to a psychologytoday.com blog post, How to Have Difficult Conversations. So we'll talk about that, really.
What got me into that was just having people come to me... not just here, but in Qatar as well, about how do you approach difficult conversation and difficult conversations in different settings. So that in Qatar it might be an interracial conversation, people from different areas not understanding each other's language and trying to work out you can say something polite without offending somebody.
Yeah, you've got to be super careful when you're in a whole other cultural environment.
You've got 75 different nationalities there trying to work together. And it's so easy to offend people just by the way you look, or you can't touch people. Or
you do something with your hand the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah, well, I did that, didn't I?
Thumbs up okay? Or
No. Thumbs up in some languages is the same as F off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have to be really, really careful. And it's almost as every time you move, you're going to offend somebody. It's working your way through. So that comes up for me quite a lot in terms of working maybe with managers who've got to have difficult conversations with members of staff, but also I've very often been dumped with the role. Can you go and tell so and so? And that starts off with smelly feet. I had one guy in an American organisation who smelt so powerfully of kind of rotting mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
And we tried everything to get him sorted out, and we couldn't. And there were complaints from customers because in his role,
wow,
and people couldn't cope with him. And in the end, he had to go because they couldn't.
It wasn't fixable.
Smelling. No,
it wasn't.
And we tried everything that we could, including trying to sort out his home life. He went to doctors to be
really
checked for fungal infections, all kinds of things.
Blimey.
Yeah. But the most difficult one
was could he smell it? Was he
no,
aware of it?
No. But whenever you went into his office or he came down the corridor, people would be waving in front of their noses and going, oh my God.
And it fell on you too.
Yeah, usually that's the way. Yeah, but no, my most difficult one was a lady who was rather large and at her time of the month smelt very powerfully.
Wow.
And was offending everybody in a big open plan office. So it was, Sean, can you go and tell this person? That was quite difficult.
So come on then, what was your process? How did you build up to it? Or did you just dive straight in there?
No. You've got to work out who you're talking to, as you end up with a broken nose. And you've got to prepare yourself. And it isn't a case of preparing yourself as in ruminating on things that are going to go wrong and getting anxious, but actually trying to create a script that you can use. So the easiest way to confront anybody in a difficult conversation is to ask them a question. If you were to go up to someone and say, do you realise you smell like the back end of the pig? Then that's, it starts to get...
Yeah, you're going to get a pop on the nose, aren't you?
Yeah, or you stink. But trying to ask more sensitive questions, like, do you have any idea about how people feel about you? Smell, just asking, making it more of a question rather than a confrontation makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. You've got to be, a little bit ready for all sorts.
Yeah.
I'm kind of joking about the old bop on the nose thing, I guess, but
that's real.
Tears, did the lady burst into tears in front of you?
Yeah, she got a bit upset, but we worked through it. And a lot of times when you get smell issues, people don't have a sense of smell. The smell's gone, and they just cannot relate to it at all.
Mm.
And I guess, if I stunk like a polecat, I would like you to tell me.
Yeah, I would. I'd be comfortable telling you, Sean.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. But that kind of stuff is, for me, important because it's a way of looking after each other.
Yeah.
If you've got someone with smelly feet, to buy them a pack of odor eaters. And some foot powder might be quite useful. Have you ever tried using it?
Yeah, have you ever?
That kind of thing. But, very often people aren't aware of it, so it is news for them. And very often people are glad that you've told them something like that.
Yeah, of course. It's a bit of sensitivity. It goes a long way.
Yeah. But there are lots of difficult conversations to have.
I can say I've got a little list of here.
What have you got on your list?
Well, I've gone with the overweight one initially. We didn't deal with the overweightness particularly there, but that's a tricky one, isn't it, with friends and family who perhaps you think need to lose a few pounds, but, it's possible to say, really, isn't it?
But
even when that classic situation, like in, was it the Fast Show or Harry Enfield, does my bum look big in this type thing? You just lie, don't you?
No, you look really slim.
Yeah, you look fantastic.
It's like you don't sweat much for a fat lass. The issue for me in that kind of stuff is a lot of it is cultural.
Mm.
We live in a world where people they wear waists, they've got belts on. If you live in a country where people wear more kaftan-like clothes, Then, yeah, issues of bums and bellies aren't there in the same way.
Okay.
Because you don't see them in our society. They stick out, literally.
Slim fit, everything,
yeah, because
isn't it?
Of, yeah, because of the way that we dress.
Yep.
So that can be quite difficult. The biggest difficult conversation that I work with people that they're having to have are the Dear John conversations. You know, this relationship is over.
Yeah, the end of relationship, man, that's a tricky one.
And one of the easiest things that people do in our society is we send them a text, you know, which is like the worst way.
Yeah, that's not great. What about a well-thought-out letter, though? Is that better? That's better than a text, right, isn't it? Or is that still ducking out the issue?
It depends. Sometimes people can only open the conversation by sending a letter.
You know,
especially if they fear the other person's volatile response, which could be an over-emotional response that they can't deal with, but it could also be an anger response, or, as you were talking about, a bop on the nose.
Yeah, I've got a pal years ago, a close friend who that's how his then long-time partner ended it. He she got this letter. She did give him the letter and gave him a hug in tears and ran away. This is when he's like 21 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's happily married now elsewhere. So, but I remember him phoning me that evening, yeah, and just like bawling his eyes out. Hey, what do I do, Ed? I've got this letter. So, from my neck. But yeah, she didn't have the courage, but I can understand why, because she didn't really want to, but felt that she had to.
So have you ever had to give anybody bad news?
Flipping heck, I should have thought this one on air, but before I came on, off the top of my head, no, although I've got a very small analogy from just last week when I had a build around at the house and I was helping him out, and he got these flagstones in to put in the garden, which you'll see at the weekend, the finished product. But yeah, he'd gone to all this effort to get these huge flagstones up to our house, but they weren't right, and I wasn't happy with them. So I had to kind of build up the courage to tell him that he was going to have to load them all up and ship them out, like half a ton's worth of stone. But I remember thinking, yeah, because they were like sat there for about an hour while he had to do another job elsewhere in the garden.
And did that conversation go right?
It went fine in the end.
Yeah,
it was fine. But I had to build up the courage over the course of an hour, but I knew I had this deadline when, you know, at some point he was going to actually put these things down and lay the cement and all that. So there was a deadline for that. So I guess with all issues like this, you do have to.
And were they replaced with ones that worked?
They were. Yeah, it was all worked out beautifully in the end.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, those kind of conversations are tough. If you someone's kind of trying to do something for you, and you're not happy with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because that feels like a personal criticism to the person.
Yeah.
Very often. Yeah.
What about yourself? Well, are you like you're Mr. Go-to guy for delivering bad news? What about in like a more professional scene in work? Because companies get you in sometimes to downsize, don't they?
Yeah, that can be a tough one, because very often in downsizing, you have to go through the staff group, and you're putting crosses by the people that you think maybe need to go.
Yeah,
as you're doing assessments of people, that could be tough, and then you've got the bad news of telling people, okay, you're going. And if you're doing it the way I have to do it sometimes, because you've done an assessment of everybody, but then it's your job to enact the assessment agreed.
My resource of the week, little spoiler alert, is a movie called Office Space, which is like a late 90s comedy, kind of a sleeper hit movie. It's pretty good. I watched it at the weekend randomly before I knew what we were talking about, and in that film, in the office, one of the bits in the story is that consultants are brought in to downsize, basically, and they start, when the consultants initially come in, the bosses are trying to pretend that it's just about, you know, making the company better, but everyone in the office knows that basically 10% of the workforce are going.
Yep.
So it goes through that process. It's a pretty funny movie, but is that the type of thing? Do people know when you're called in that, people are going to be
involved
for the chop?
I was involved in the closure program of psyche hospitals around the country when we closed 5 altogether. But when I was in Wales, you know, you get called Evans the Milk, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was known as Sean Closure. And if I walked in on a ward, people would go, oh, we closed it, let me close it, and they start panicking. Which was quite tough. But I've done things, closure programs, downsizing, and nobody wants. The main thing people don't want to hear about is change, because that's what it means when these things happen.
Yeah,
something's going to change, and people don't want to do that. They want things to stay as they are. So you are the carrier of bad news, and then it's like, can you shoot the messenger for the news? Well, yes, you can, because people want to put the blame somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's easier to put it on that person, which is why sometimes it's easier to be a consultant who goes into an organisation, does the dirty deed, and then leaves.
Gets out.
Yeah, because then you can take the blame with you like a scapegoat.
Okay. Yeah. Which is why big companies will hire consultants to come in and do all that stuff for
them. When I worked in the children's hospital, there were issues then when having to deal with parents. It's just been in the news recently, with the little boy who can't be fixed.
Yep.
And the issue is, at what point do you turn the machines off? And those kinds of conversations are really difficult.
Yeah.
With people, that's hard. That kind of bad news.
Yeah. Okay. So in a healthcare setting, doctors and consultants that need to tell people about bad news.
Okay. Mm.
How are they trained to do that, or is that just something?
I used to do. The GPs have to do so many professional development points a year.
Yeah.
And in North Wales, at one point, I was doing their training, which was the bedside manner bit.
Right.
Which is how do you say things to people?
Okay.
Very much. You know. And if you're delivering the news to somebody. Actually, I have quite a few problems with consultants who maybe are working in oncology who need to tell somebody very clearly that the prospects are not good and they can't do it.
Because a lot of people in that line of work, surgeons, consultants, will be quite, have that kind of brain, won't they, where things are very black and white.
But they don't want to face the emotion.
Mm.
You know, so and very often a doctor is in the business to cure people.
Yeah.
And now they've got to tell the person that they're failing, they can't actually cure them, you know, they're going to die. And that's quite a tough thing to do. And it can be a pain in the backside when you've got a patient who thinks that they're going to get better because the doctor hasn't got the balls to tell them that's not going to happen.
Does that happen very often, though?
More often than it should.
Really?
Yeah, and that's tough, I think, when you're in that kind of work. Because other people have to pick it up, you know, whether it's the nurses, the psychologists, whatever,
have to translate what it actually means by when
or,
a doctor
or
says,
sometimes, oh, sometimes they end up having to be a part of this conspiracy of silence, because if you end up saying to the patient, well, you realise that this is the reality of the situation, they say, well, no, I spoke to the doctor and the doctor said, so you end up in that kind of conflict space, it just creates more and more problems for people.
Yep.
Or it could be that it's the other way around, that the person is dying and they're okay with the fact that they're dying, but the family can't cope with the fact that they're dying, so they can't hear that information, they can't hear that message, they don't want to.
Mm.
And people will say, don't tell me. But you do give people the option in those situations. You say to patients, what do you want to know?
Yep.
And very often patients will say, I don't want to know, just don't tell me. And that isn't uncommon, you know.
Really?
But it's tough, you know, and it's the issue we're all going to die. But those conversations are the most difficult ones to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the ultimate, isn't it?
I worked with a lady who everyone in her family had mastectomies or had died of breast cancer. And the consultant, it was when they were really starting to discover the issues about BRCA gene and stuff like that.
Yep.
And the consultant called her in and said, I need to tell you this. We have to give you a double mastectomy now while you're healthy, because your genetic predisposition is so bad that if we don't do it now, then you're going to get cancer. And that was a very hard conversation for her to have with him. She went home to her husband to tell him what was going on, and he took one look at her and said, well, I'm not staying with you with no breast, and left.
No way.
Packed his stuff and went the same day. Yeah.
It's outrageous.
Difficult conversations. How do people react? How do people respond? You know, what do you do? And when you start to get into those very, very difficult areas of life, I often think about diplomats when they are having conversations about wars, or we're not going to war, or we are going to go to war. You know, how difficult is that in a...
Yeah, politicians in general have a pretty unique way of discussing things and avoiding...
Yeah, they lie.
That's the one.
Yeah, they tell you what you want.
But it's quite an art form, really. You know, I'm a bit of a news junkie for my sins, but it's quite an art form watching the men and women, our public representatives, avoid answering things. I mean, as frustrating as it is, it's quite impressive how they manage to do it.
But you can end up in that situation where you can have a conversation with somebody and you still don't know the answer to the question.
Mm.
Psychologists are good at that. They can spend 2 pages, 3 pages writing in psycho speak, and all they've actually said is no. But it's taken 3 pages to get there.
Yeah.
And no would have been easier. So I think the world is full of difficult conversations. But the kind of things that we were talking about was... You were saying, should you prepare? And I think, yes, you should. Not prepare anxiety, but prepare strategy. The other thing is, where are you going to do it? If you've got to give someone bad news, where do you give it to them? What time of day do you give it to them?
Yeah.
And are they going to need support afterwards? So do you need to make sure there's support for them after they've had that bad news? And there's a whole load of things that go with it that actually make your job easier.
Yeah.
Giving someone the bad news, because you know that they're going to be okay.
I got a good story here, but it's not mine. Yeah. Mike?
Yes.
Can I tell that story about the Polish guy you hired and fired? It's a pretty cool one, actually. Mike did a really good deed. But many years ago-ish, Mike's a web designer too, or web developer. And he went through an interview process for a position at his company. Found this great guy, a Polish guy, I believe.
Yes, Polish.
And hired him, basically. So this guy's super excited, smart dude. Went back to Poland to get all his family together and bring all his stuff over in a van or a car or something like that. And whilst he was over there, I don't know what happened. The position was closed for whatever reason.
After 6 months, he went back after 6 months on holiday to go and get more things from Poland.
Oh, right, so he did 6 months see how he went, and he was doing well. Smart guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then he went back to get his stuff, and what happened when he was away? He lost the contract.
Part of our business went down. Swanee.
Yeah, so basically a big contract or client of Mike's went belly up, and so this guy had come back from Poland, and Mike had to deliver this news just to relocate all his family and belongings
that
the job was over. But Mike then spent the week with this chap, getting his CV ready, helping him find other work, and I think within a week he got another job.
Yeah, we sat on the Monday, and by Friday he got the job.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And he's beasted it since then, and I think he's on Megabooks now.
Yeah, now I can't afford to rehire him.
Because Mike wants to hire someone, but this guy's gone on to another level. But yeah, Mike did well there, didn't he? Obviously, this is a really tricky conversation. I remember him telling me how he was dreading it beyond all belief. But put these things in place to kind of soften the blow a little bit and help the guy through it, and you know.
Yeah. But that's good, is it? Because that's what I mean about support. You know, what is it? If you're going to give someone bad news, giving them the bad news can actually be the easy bit.
Yeah.
It's the other bit that's difficult. It's how do you support someone through that?
Mm.
And, ultimately, if you're having to give someone the news that they are terminal, you know, very often the role then is you have to support them through to that end.
Yeah.
And that can be tougher than the conversation. It depends on what's going on. You know, I've got a million things coming back to me now. I've got a patient from years ago, over 20 years ago, who the consultant calls me in and says, you have to stop this patient cutting her breasts because I can't stitch scar to scar. And she was a cutter. She was working around her body, and he was saying, "I'll have to amputate her breasts if she doesn't stop cutting, because you can't scar where it healed to scar. You have to have fresh tissue." And,
jeez,
you know, that kind of thing. And those kinds of things are very difficult to deliver to people, because the cutting is a symptom; it's not the cause.
Yeah.
You know, so do you just move on to cutting somewhere else?
That's definitely worse than Mike's story.
But all the time when you're doing therapeutic kind of work, you're faced with those kinds of decisions frequently.
Yeah.
And lots of people will just avoid the decision. know, avoid
the
conversation. Yeah,
kick the can down the road.
And then people would say, "But you never told me that. Why didn't you tell me that?" Mm. No. And the answer usually is because I couldn't face it myself.
Yeah.
No, that's the tough bit. And I always think that, is that when I've got to deliver bad news to people, I always think that however difficult this is for me, for them it's going to be a million times worse.
Yeah.
You know, that's the tough stuff.
So in summary, when in doubt, just email them.
Yeah. When in doubt, leave. Yeah, no, I think it's a case of like the checklist we were talking about, you know, prepare yourself, make sure you do it in the right place at the right time, with whatever support is needed, because they may need support with them. I mean, very often in a workplace, you make sure they've got a union rep with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is some kind of support.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a pal who's HR in a hospital nearby as well, and he knows all about that stuff. And he's the bearer of bad news quite often. Yeah. So it'd be good to get his thoughts. But yeah.
I guess the biggest thing is don't avoid it. Bad news, difficult communication that is avoided becomes a bigger and bigger problem over time.
Yeah.
You know, so like you and the builder, you know, you were sat there and you left it until the poor man had carried the stuff up from the road. You could have told him.
I could have told him on the first one, couldn't I?
Yeah.
The first slab.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Lesson learned. Have you got a resource of the week?
Yeah, I've got a book down here which is Dealing with Difficult People. And it says dealing with difficult people and creating success. But what it's saying is, okay, to get to success, there are some difficult things you've got to do.
Yeah.
So it's like good advice about how you get on and do it.
Okay, cool. And mine is, it's a movie I've already mentioned, Office Space.
Yeah, you'll have to watch it.
90-something off Jennifer Aniston, youngish Jennifer Aniston's in it. Right. So it's quite a funny little movie, quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That's it, livingthepresent.co.uk. There's our website, check it out, show notes, links, lots of resources, some free, some not, but take a look. If there's anything you'd like us to discuss in an upcoming show, drop us an email, because not that we're running out of topics, but I haven't got my list of emails from people with their suggestions is running low, so if there's anything...
You've only got 20 left.
Right? Yeah, exactly, we're running out, what are we going to do? I'll see you all next week. Sean, you take care.
You're going to see people.
Well,
that's very clever.
Probably not many of these guys, but some people.
I need to have a difficult conversation with
you. Yeah. <what? laughs> Take it easy, Sean.
See you.
See you later.